Wallace, welcome to the show. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I am doing very well. I know it's, you don't want to bring up the past, and it's been a while since it happened. But in 2008, when you think you've got a medal, and then when we were having you on to rewatch the race, like we're talking like literally like an inch, and it wouldn't, you know, we could calculate. I don't think it would have impacted whether or not fourth place catches you or not. How long did it take you to get over that line violation?
Oh man, we're getting straight to the nitty gritty, aren't we?
Yeah.
I'd say it took me about. Actually, hopefully I get a medal now, and then I'll finally be over it. But to where I could actually participate in track and field with no hatred, it probably took me about 6 months. I was a little upset.
Yeah.
I had knee surgery about a month later after that race, so I was upset through that whole process.
Now, you hadn't had a great start in that race. Is that why it caught? Were you thinking, man, I gotta get to the inside of the track as much as I can?
I mean, honestly, it's just you gravitate to your competition. So I was in the farthest lane out. Mm-hmm. Everyone was inside of me. I felt like I needed to be closer to them. So, I mean, I was trying to stay close to the line, but I wasn't trying to run on the line. So that probably had a big deal. Actually, that was the main reason why I think I did that in that race.
When you run, like if you get lane 8 to lane 4 to lane 1, obviously we know the corners are tighter. Does that really change how you attack and your strategy in the 400 meter?
Well, I mean, somewhere in the 2 or the 4, anything with the curve, sprint. If you're on the inside, it's a lot more difficult to run the turn being on the inside lane, especially if you're 6 foot and above. Your long legs, man, it's just extremely difficult. So you pretty much do as much work as you can without killing yourself. And then on the straightaway, you're pretty much playing catch-up. You need to have a lot of strength. So that was my main focus, to get off the curve as quick as possible and give myself a chance on the straightaway to catch everyone.
We see it all the time. Usually the middle of the track, you know, as you qualify, you know, those are the best lanes that people want, and at 3 through 6. Is there one you found historically that you run better in?
Anywhere in the outside. So if this is an 8-lane track from 5 to 8,
okay,
or 9-lane track, same thing, 6 through 9. So anything on the outside is typically good for me. I don't know how Bolt does it, man. He runs really well in whatever lane. 3, 4, 5, 6, and he's about 6'6", so yeah, that guy's a freak.
I was going to ask you about that because, you know, he's so much taller than you know, sprinters we've ever seen, and every athlete in every sport seems to be getting bigger, stronger, faster now, but
yeah,
because
sure.
You're taller, that doesn't change the physics of the tight corners. Have you watched him? What does he do that allows him to excel in those tight areas?
Man, if I could figure that out, I definitely would use it in my own running style, but I haven't quite figured it out yet. I was just talking to Jeremy Warner at practice today, and he said the same thing. How in the heck does Bolt run that fast on the corners? Tyson Gay does it, but he's about 5'11", maybe 6 foot, so I can see why he does it. But Bolt is just, he's so tall, and he accelerates so quickly around the bend. So, man, I have no idea. That guy's, he's a freak. He's blessed.
3-time U.S. Outdoor champion Wallace Spearman joins us, of course, 2-time Olympian as well. I'm assuming then you'll be around, obviously, for the Olympics in 2016. From those two past experiences, what can you take from them to try to finally get on the podium, having been disqualified and finishing fourth?
2008, I was hurt, so honestly, it was just trying to get through the rounds and seeing what I could do for the finals. 2012. I switched coaches, and I was really fast, but I wasn't as strong per se.
Okay.
So I've just learned what I need to do in order for those rounds. I mean, we have rounds of world championships like we'll have this summer and at USA's, but it's completely different. It's a completely different atmosphere. I mean, when you're out there and there's the whole world is watching, there's nothing that can duplicate that feeling. So I learned that I need to prepare myself mentally and physically. On the track, weight room, you know, a lot of Americans don't do the Pilates or yoga, but that things like that help, and supplements. So, I mean, we have so many Americans that they come and go, and by the time they learn what they need to do, that, I mean, their chance is probably over. I've had a long career, and I'm still around, so hopefully my plan is to have one more Olympics at least. You know, if things get really crazy, you know, 2020, I think this might be the time where I actually hopefully can get a medal.
Now, you mentioned how in 2012 you were fast but not strong. How could you be a fast sprinter but not have the strength? Because to me, don't you have to be strong to be fast? Or like, kind of describe the differences in sprinting, how fast is without necessarily being strong.
All right, so we have this argument all the time in the U.S. with the football players, and we'll tell them that they're quick. So they'll have short bursts of speed.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe 10 to 40 yards, and then after that, you see them taper off and they die. And it's just, for track athletes, it's pretty funny. But you see 60-meter runners, shorter sprinters, and they can run 100. And if you put them in further events, they don't have the speed endurance to hold that top-end speed. I myself, that's what I've made a career off of, is speed endurance. So initially, whenever we go to practice during the fall, when sprinters are first training, they're doing longer distance stuff, somewhat like the distance runners, a kiddie version of that, if you will. And then as the season progresses, you see them taper down into getting fast. So there's always natural speed within a sprinter. And even you, if I took you to practice and we trained for 6 months, initially you would have some, whatever your speed limit is, and then we'd make you more efficient and we'd build up your speed endurance, your ability to fight off lactic acid, and you become faster. And it's not even that you become faster as a human being, you just shave tenths and milliseconds off your time. So mm-hmm. It's the perception of I'm running faster than before.
You know, nowadays, like the 1/100th of a second, like there's so much technique involved in it, and there always has been. And it really, we're talking like seconds. And you know, you see a guy who wins a race by you know, 2 or 3 or 4 1/100ths. That's a big deal in track and field. When did you start to really become a student of sprinting?
Well, honestly, my father ran track when I was young, so I've been bred in the sport. I mean, some of my first memories are actually at track meets, so
okay,
playing around, watching him run. So I think I learned what a drive phase was when I was 5 years old. So, I mean, whether I realize it or not, I was bred for track. I didn't quite like it when I was young. I didn't like track and field at all, but I learned to love it. So that's just something that as you progress in the sport, you'll see a lot of young kids, they're just actually good and they're talented. And then when you put them with the other group of people who are just as talented, they have to find ways to get better. So that's when you start becoming a student of the sport if you're a true competitor, because most athletes don't like to lose. So they start finding good ways to get better, you know, as far as let me clean up my start, let me hold my drive phase, let me not let my elbows go out, flare out, or, I mean, just they clean up their running style, their technique, and that's exactly what happens.
Wallace Spearman joins us. He is in town, of course, for the big track event, the Tracktown Classic at Foote Field on Saturday and Sunday, one of the top sprinters in the world. Has 200 always been your favorite race? You mentioned when you were younger, you didn't really like sprinting. Most sprinters run the 100, they run the 2, some run, you know, the 4. When did you realize that the 2 was your race of choice?
From a young age, my first track meet, I think I was in 6th grade, and I think I got 4th place in the 100-meter dash, which was ironically my favorite event. Is the shortest, and then I actually won the 200. So from that age, my father realized I'd probably be pretty good, and it just kind of stuck with me. He was pretty good at the 2 also. He was better at the 200 than the 100. His start was really bad, and unfortunately for me, genetically, he passed that right down. So hence, Wallace Spearman Jr. has a bad start, and he runs the straightaway. That's exactly how my father ran. That's how I do it. So it's 200 gives us more time to catch up.
So is it just the natural DNA fast twitch muscles?
I guess so. I mean, everyone always says, why do you run such a bad turn, or why don't you run a great turn? Well, I mean, I've ran 996 in 100, and the guys I race with, Bolt, Tyson, Justin Gatlin, I mean, these guys are running 96s, 95s, 97s.
Mm-hmm.
So even if I ran 99 hypothetically around the turn, and they ran their PR, I'm still going to be behind. So I don't understand somewhat why people always pick on that. So I just think that was, I got some good genes and I got some bad genes.
And you know what? It's got to be a mental challenge then in track when you look and say, man, even if I'm running my best, I'm going to have to play catch up all the time.
Yeah, it definitely is. You know, as a competitor, you wish you could just, I mean, even if you're rooting for your favorite team, sometimes you just want to see a blowout. You just want to see your favorite team or your favorite athlete go out there and just destroy the competition. And it seems like everyone who cheers for me always says, man, you're going to give us a heart attack. Every time we watch you run, we're so nervous because you're so far back and you always catch up. So, yeah, I've learned to play from behind. And that's just kind of what happens.
You ever thought about running the 400?
Sheesh. I was actually am scheduled to run some this summer. I've dedicated my last 2 years of fall training to 400-meter running.
Okay.
And I'm just now becoming healthy, so... Yeah, I definitely want to dabble with that and see what happens.
Is the 400, like, I know it, like, kind of the junior ranks to me. I always felt the 400 was the toughest. Is the 800 the toughest now amongst the elite sprinters? Because, like, these guys, you look at the pace these guys maintain over 800 meters. To me, that's ridiculous.
Man, I'm with you on that. That is totally ridiculous. I think the first, what was it, 2012 or 11? I can't remember the year, but I saw Dave Rudisha. And he came across the 400. His split for the first 400 was 48. And I had never seen him run before. So I'm thinking to myself, man, this guy is going to die. There's no way he's going to hold this. And there were two rabbits in front of him. He pushed one of them off the track at 500 meters and one of them at 600. And I'm sitting here watching watching him race when I'm supposed to be warming up for mine, thinking I'm going to enjoy watching him die. And he runs 141. And I just remember being in awe. So I didn't realize the 800-meter was a sprint. Until then, but yes, it's a dash, and it has to be the hardest. I mean, if they're running 145, then maybe the 400 hurdles or the 100 because it's very technical. But when they're running these 143s, 142s, and anything faster than that, yeah, that's definitely the hardest race.
What do you think you could run the 800 in?
I'd say about 3 minutes. Flat. Don't worry about it. I got you covered. 3 minutes flat.
Most track athletes were great in a lot of other field events too when they're little, right? They're just great athletes. You can sell in other ones. What other events did you enjoy as a kid other than the sprints?
I actually was recruited to college for football, American football for one, but I was supposed to be a jumper and a hurdler. I jumped 24-10 in high school, and we had 300 hurdles, so I ran, I couldn't even tell you the time now, it was like 37 low or something like that. But
in high school?
It wasn't until I got to college. I jumped 25-10 my first meet, and they put me in the 200, and I ran 20-80 with no speed training. I mean, they just kind of threw me in to get a workout. And the sprint coach walked over and said, "You're a sprinter now," and I never jumped again.
Really?
Yep.
So they just robbed the jumpers and put them in sprinting if you got
it. And our jump coach was not very happy.
Yeah, I would think, because he recruited you basically to be a jumper.
Exactly. So, yeah, he was not very happy at all.
Do you miss jumping?
I do sometimes. I mean, when you're dealing with injuries, that's the last thing I want to do because that's definitely hard on your body. But if I'm healthy, heck yeah, I'd love to go out there and long jump one day. I even want to try the 400 hurdles just to see what I could do.
Oh, nice. Well, Wallace, it's supposed to be very hot, 30 degrees, which is hot for us. That's around 90 Fahrenheit. Is that good for track athletes or is that too hot?
For sprinters, that's really good. For distance runners, when they're running for that long of a time, that's pretty hard on their body. So hopefully they'll get to run a little earlier when it's not so hot.
Well, we look forward to seeing you on the track over the weekend. Appreciate your time.
Much appreciated, sir. Good talking to you all.